Words on Water. Words on Water.
Welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. This is the host, Travis Loop. Very excited to be joined by Tom Ferguson, Vice President of Programming for Imagine H2O. Tom, how's it going?
Yeah, not bad, Travis. Thank you very much for having me back. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
Absolutely. We're back on here to talk about innovation. And, you know, we at WEF work with you all on the Innovation Summit out there in San Francisco every year. And it's a great opportunity to kind of check in on what aspect of innovation being focused on this year. It's always a really interesting wrinkle. It's something the water sector should be thinking about. I'm curious to hear kind of what the focus is this year. What's the frame?
The frame for the summit. I mean, it's such a funny thing, you know, what are we focused on in any given year in a more kind of generalized basis at Imagine H2O is a tough one. We've just spent the beginning of, this year working with our new accelerator group, the new 13 companies from the Accelerator 2020. And oh boy, are they all over the map. In terms of the actual innovation themes, we're dealing with a lot from across all over the water sector. But I think that's also going to be reflected in the summit. But to answer your question directly, really the theme of this year, it's 2020. We've just come into a new decade. And so we thought, following on from the theme of last year, which was the next generation, what happens when we ask some of the world's top water experts, look, we've got 10 years in front of us. You know, we want to be somewhere, you know, appreciable by 2030. We've got the sustainable development goals to meet. So let's talk about, you know, the themes and opportunities that are going to come out in the next decade. So that is the theme of the week. That is the theme for the summit. It's the next decade. And it's shaping up nicely. It's going to be interesting, I think.
Awesome. Well, I looked at the agenda and I want to kind of talk about some of these topics because I think it's again, just thought-provoking stuff. It's some of those existential issues that we should be wrestling with. So one of the kind of things is you're talking to a veteran of the water sector. Could you talk about that, the purpose of having that speaker?
Well, one of the things that we've learned over the 4 years doing this with WEF, and you really are such wonderful partners, is that, like, it's really helpful for a group of people to all be kind of singing from the same hymn sheet. Like, what are the facts of the case, basically? Because usually with these kind of things, you kind of jump into the first panel session and it's slightly without kind of context because you know, things were just kind of conjured out of thin air. But we think what really worked well with Peter Brooks last year was like, okay, the next generation, what are the facts of the human elements of the water sector? What do we really need to all understand on a factual basis to be able to like really contextualize the rest of what's going on during the day? And we thought, you know, if we're talking about the next decade, let's have a little look at the previous one and the previous one and the previous one. And that said to us, we need to really find someone who has been around the water sector and has grown to be a universally acknowledged leadership. And all signs pointed to the really excellent Enrique Zaldivar, who's the GM of LA Sanitation. He operates a $1.1 billion budget in Los Angeles, really at the top of the tree. And I just did the sort of one of the first planning call with him the other day, and just the level of insight. And so the way we're going to structure this is that he's going to talk about 1990 to 2000. 2000 to 2010, then 2010 to 2020, and given the lessons that he took away and what he saw change in the water sector as a whole, not just obviously on the West Coast and in LA, but across the country, where does he think this particular train is going? And we're so happy to have him. It's been great to get to know him over the last the last couple of years, and I think he's going to kick us off really nicely.
Yeah, that's awesome. I would very much look forward to hearing that type of perspective and that history lesson, but not from a straight historic standpoint, but the perspective that comes with it, right?
Exactly. The thematic elements, this is really what we're always trying to pull out. We don't want to give anybody a history lesson. what's important for us is to be able to pull out the real themes that are emerging, because it gives everybody kind of an analytical framework. Because when they're talking about anything from climate change to synthetic biology to desalination, whatever, like, you know, even in the context of just having people here for a day or the 2.5 days that Water Innovation Week is, it's the themes of change that I think are going to prepare people to go out and contextualize their work when they're back in the field, they're back behind their desk, they're back behind the wheel of an F-150, whatever it is. That, you know, they're that they kind of understand from the point of view of somebody who has definitely been there and done that and is still doing it. You know, what is really driving the overall change in the sector, and how innovation can fit into those overall themes.
Another thing that is part of your summit, which I think is essential, is this idea of taking lessons from other industries, right? And we live in the water world, but there is so much that we can learn from looking at others. And other sectors have also gone through times of tremendous change, as kind of we are right now. What in your mind is valuable about that? How does that help push us forward in innovation, you know, the idea of working with others, listening to others?
Yeah, it's exactly what you said. I mean, it's so valuable. I mean, we were just doing a prep call for the opening session of the Utility Management Conference, which is obviously co-organized by WEF and the AWWA at the end of February. And I encourage everybody listening to join that as well. But we were just talking about the opening general session. And I've always been struck by this idea of Hamilton. Hamilton, runaway success, obviously incredibly talented people, but at its core, it's the bringing together of two ideas that do not belong together, right? It is hip-hop and the incredibly, just a really compelling, quite tragic story about somebody who has, like, innate drama within his life, and those things go together. I mean, a hip-hop music, like, what? Where did that come from? And actually, when you look at, like, real innovations that have caught, like, fire over the year, what you're seeing is the suffusing of, you know, really quite disparate ideas. And often the more disparate, the more powerful. And I think that we spend a lot of time listening to each other, which we absolutely should. Like, water is a pretty esoteric animal, and that not everything from outside is necessarily relevant to what water is. But, you know, for something like what you do, right? Marketing and communications and branding and working with storytelling and all this kind of stuff, is that historically that has not been a priority of the water sector. And I think what we've seen even in the last, like, 6 to 12 months is an explosion of interest in figuring out that stories are just as important to them as they are to everybody else. That's an idea of, like, two ideas that historically haven't gone together being pulled together.
And learning a lot of lessons about how to do that type of thing from other industries, right? Seeing that
exactly.
What they do, yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know us and how we kind of think about this. It's really important for us that we take risks. And it's not entirely clear that having a panel of Edelman talking about advertising and marketing, the upheavals in the advertising and marketing world since sort of the beginning of the 2000s. Personal transport, someone very senior from Lime, who was Dara's chief of staff at Uber, and before that worked in the White House dealing with the 2008 meltdown. Wayne Ting is a fascinating guy. We're going to have someone from Stripe talking about fintech, and the sort of the balance between the kind of the very highly funded innovators and the extremely large incumbents, and how that is kind of fitting together. And then the obvious one is solar. What can we learn from the kind of onwards march of solar, from something that sort of started off as a hardware problem but has almost unexpectedly rapidly turned into a finance problem? Like, deploying this at scale really now becomes a finance issue. And between those four representatives, what we're going to have is something that is not about water. It's about how humans deal with change. It's about how institutions deal with change, how you can spot change early, how you can get ahead of change through everything from the adoption of technology to hiring people ahead of that curve. No idea how it's going to go. It's going to be quite fun. And it's certainly going to be something a bit different. But it, like, you know, with all of this stuff, the way we select the roster of things to happen at the summit, you know, it's got to be something that we would want to see. That's like almost our fundamental test. And I've always wanted to see a session like this where you have people that don't know anything about the water sector. They do know about the themes that we are going to be dealing with.
The water sector is very focused on the day that's in front of them and maybe the next day and the very short term, right? Because they're just rightfully so very concerned with delivering water, treating water, keeping people safe and all that kind of thing. One of the challenges is long-term planning. And it's even more challenging in this time of great disruption and a drive toward innovation. So I'm curious to hear the thoughts on why you wanted to include a discussion about the long term in this summit.
Yeah, I mean, we all know what our email inboxes look like. You know, it's like the day to day. I mean, we use this phrase, the knife fight in a phone box. You know, this is like that is used to sort of sum up the entrepreneurial experience. But it's kind of the whack-a-mole of everything that is kind of going on currently, and being able to kind of lift your head above the parapet and look down the line is like nominally the job of the GM or the CEO or the entrepreneur or like whatever it is. But life is hard and life is fast. But for anybody who is a professional within the water sector, like whether you are an advisor, whether you are a consultant, whether you're an investor, whether you are a customer of water, like it really helps to be able to get your head up and have a plan. And so what we wanted to do was include this discussion between a public company and a private company about what that planning looks like and then what the execution against that plan looks like. Because this is as relevant for somebody who is like 2 years into their job within a department at a utility as it is for a fellow public company CEO, right? Is that the dynamics of this work of having the, or creating the time and space within you and your team's agenda to stop and look 6 months, 12 months, 18, 24 months out, 5 years out, because it forces you to consider, like, what is it that we are doing here? Why are we? And all humans need to know the why, right? Like, what problems are we trying to solve? And that says, like, okay, that is a combination between budgets, people, and hardware, right? Usually, or software. And so that means, like, what are the innovations that we are out looking for? What are the innovations that we need to create? What is the development in our product plan? What does that need to be to sort of get ourselves towards that end goal that we're setting? And once we set those end goals, we can also then look at the current abilities of our team and then what do we need to build within our team to be able to get ourselves to where we want to go. But also, what do we need to buy? What do we need to add in terms of the people that we want to bring in to our team to be able to build out our capabilities, to be able to serve our customers at the water price point that we absolutely need to be able to be able to like limit sewer rates to the extent that we need to in the context of what's going on. How are we going to be able to employ, basically like employ innovations to be able to replace our pipeline network at the in the most efficient way possible? How are we going to like deal with a really changing, you know, stormwater landscape, whether we are an industrial or we are a city? Like, you got to get your head up. But we usually hear that, and then we don't really hear the dynamics of how people who are very, very good at this get this done. So we're really excited. We've got Mirka Wilderer, who is the CEO of Denora, and then David Stanton, who's been a friend of Imagination World for a very, very, very long time. He's the CEO of Suez Utility Holdings. And like both of them are charged with really planning for the long term. And we've asked them both to really get into the grips of like how do you force your teams to do it, the operational ramifications of that planning process, and basically give people a case study into true kind of leaders' thought process that they can then take away as they do their own planning for their own teams, obviously from us at the employment of innovation. But we think it's something that you don't see very often, but I've always wondered, like, how do you actually go about doing it?
Exactly. And it's just got to be so tremendously challenging to plan long term during a time when there's so much changing. You know, technology is out of date by the time you buy something, right? The next thing's coming along, and we don't really know what's coming 5 years from now, 10 years from now, because of this crazy pace of change. So it's just an extra fascinating time to be in charge of long-term planning.
It really is. But one of the things that Jobs had this, I mean, do all roads lead back to Steve Jobs, whatever you think of him personally.
Sure.
But he has the surest way to predict the future is the creative. And we work with startup founders who are essentially trying to do that. But, you know, someone like Enrique at LSN or David at Suez or, Ralph at Suez WTS, you know, whoever it is, like, you can make the bets and people will build stuff.
Yeah, you know, that's an amazing.
You sort of create the future by the decisions you make now, and I think that's something that hopefully we'll really get into this at multiple points during the conversation, whether it's in these opening sessions or in the breakouts, because like this stuff isn't theoretical. This is coming, but you can actually shape what's coming by the decisions you make in the present. It's a bit meta.
One of the things that I greatly appreciate, and I know colleagues of mine across the water sector appreciate, is this idea of asking really tough questions, throwing out controversial statements. Yeah. It's not just in a lot of operations that the water sector is conservative and reserved, but I think in some of this self-examination and some of these tough discussions, right? So talk to me about the decision to take that on.
Just the action of like highlighting things that usually people don't really want to highlight, discovered is that people actually quite like that. They like engaging with really controversial stuff. And we don't know what the questions are going to be. And I want to get them to hear what they're going to say about things like, you know, all predictions are pointless because nobody knows anything. And actually what would be more productive is to act from an assumption that nobody knows anything, you know, work from there. Or that the idea of data being fundamentally transformative to the sector has been overblown for 5 years and will be overblown for the next 10. Or that, like, are 70% of the water utilities in the country functionally insolvent relative to what they need to do in order to provide their services according to code? Like, I don't know what these are going to be,
right.
But those are questions that will inevitably annoy some people, and there will be like visceral reactions to those. But like, it's usually when those, but I know this, I'm not known to kind of ignore my visceral reaction to the thing. It's a kind of elephant and rider problem. I actually got shouted at in business school for being too instinctual. But it's really interesting when we feel that kind of instinctual reaction. That's usually the time when it is most important for us to stop and think about why we feel that way. Why is it that we are having an emotional reaction to that statement? And what are the assumptions that are underlying that emotional reaction that we need to examine, that we need to make sure are true before we rely on them as being part of our like decision-making toolkit as we go about our careers in the water sector, as we go about keeping people safe, as we go about making kind of leadership decisions about what we're going to do with our like really scarce resources of time and budget. We've got to make sure that what we're dealing with is true. And I think the controversial questions is a really good way of going about examining some kind of slightly third rail things. Even if the answer from the panel is like, I don't agree with that controversial statement, or I do agree with that controversial statement, whatever it is, the key is to have a discussion.
Again, I think that it's this type of approach, these types of sessions and so forth that make people come to this summit because they know it's going to be not the traditional script or traditional focus. It's fun stuff. It really is. Yeah, you'll be taking on, there'll be some focus on some topics, you know, sustainable development goals with climate change factoring into that, you know, setting up the structure at utilities, also, you know, hard technology, decentralized infrastructure, stuff like that. So it's cool that you guys are going to be digging into a bunch of topics there and kind of like what is the next decade going to bring in these areas? Those are huge challenges, right? The factors of climate change.
Huge challenges. And I think some people look at the kind of the the name of a Water Innovation Week, right? And they say, oh, I'm just going to be able to spend a lot of time looking at the next latest gizmo or the next piece of software as a service. Like, we do that. We will do that at the demo day. We have an entire afternoon of people to do one-to-ones and breakouts with, you know, customers, investors, and founders. You know, there is a lot of time to talk about innovation. But innovation doesn't mean anything without the context of the structure within which it operates. And I think sometimes people look at our summit agenda and go like, hey, how much are we going to get into, like, you know, the new gizmos? Do need to make sure that we are dealing with that as well. But like, we really, it's very important to get the context. And one of the big pieces of context is that our tribe is big, all right? Our tribe is all water professionals across the world trying to keep our fundamental molecule safe for everybody that needs to drink it, wash with it, have it as an input into creating the goods and services that we all need to make sure that we don't have to go back to being hunter-gatherers. So one of those things that, like, a big overall theme that I think every water professional, whether you're starting out or whether you're looking at the water sector as somewhere to go and apply your time and energy as a professional, which is the most valuable thing you have to give, like, climate change is the defining issue of, will be the defining issue of my professional life. And I'm, whatever, 13 years into it. But we don't hear enough about the water in the context of climate change, and specifically the big unifying global effort that are the sustainable development goals. Mm-hmm. Like, what does this mean for our work in California, in San Francisco, in the US, in the Americas? Like, how does this fit into this framework that a lot of the rest of the world is talking about? And it's just, it's really exciting. We've got, you know, Jennifer Sara, who is the director of the Global Water Practice at the World Bank. We have Neil Jeffrey, who is the CEO for Water and Sanitation for the Urban Poor. We're going to be doing a breakout session on India and water access. We're going to do a breakout session on urban issues in the context of our Urban Water Challenge. But we want people to walk away, if they choose to go to this track of sessions, or even one or two of the three on offer, that they're getting, like, proper global context of what does this challenge look like elsewhere. Because I think it's really important for our own motivation. As I just said, like, structure matters. We need to have a serious conversation in this industry about regulation and lobbying. One of the things that I find really, WEF does a great job of it. And everybody who knows Steve Dye knows that he does a really excellent job in Washington. But there are people, it's a zero-sum game. Dollars that go elsewhere don't go anywhere else, by definition. And people who we don't necessarily want to be terribly effective at playing that game are terribly effective at playing that game. The opioid crisis, for example, and subsidies for oil and gas and fossil fuels that are creating the climate issue. We need water to have a better voice. I know that there have been some setbacks in terms of water rules just in the last week, but we need to stick at it. We need to understand how we influence the rules of the game to keep people safe, to keep nature safe, to keep our oceans safe, because livelihoods depend on a lot of different stuff that relies on water. So let's get better at doing that. So we've invited a lobbyist from Washington to come and look at that side of things. But then we also need to think about finance, the money. Where's the money going to come from? It is a big question. And what are the innovative approaches to doing it? But then obviously we want to get down to the innovation side of things. And there is a whole bunch of stuff that we could have chosen, but we've chosen decentralization, having a real conversation about, like, not necessarily what does decentralization look like when all communities have a miniaturized wastewater treatment plant sitting in the middle of them. That's kind of out there. We want to talk about what is here and now. Epic Cleantech or Oneka with their small scale desal solution. There is some really, really interesting stuff going on. But that's kind of the first pillar. The second is what's happening in desalination. Peter Fisk at NAWI, they just won the DOE's contract for over $100 million to look at the next generation of desal technologies. And there is a lot to grapple with, but it's great to have Peter involved and his colleague Morgan Mauter, who is from Stanford. She's absolutely fantastic. And so they're going to be talking about that. And then the last thing is that something that I've never seen anybody talk about at another conference, which is synthetic biology. From what I've seen, I think being able to create biological entities that can essentially do your bidding sound scary, but has progressed at such a rate during the last 5 years that I think that there is a huge possibility it's going to transform our sector in the next 10 years. And I think we need to start thinking about it. From Silmar Group and then Molly Morse from Mango Material, who are just two practitioners that are going to be able to give us the skinny on something that people haven't spoken to before. It's fun. It's choose your own adventure for the people who are coming to the summit. There is opportunity cost for each of these sessions because there are 9 different sessions and only 3 slots. But it certainly helps you have a bit of a think about, like, what are the various areas that I need to bear in mind as I think about the next few years of my career.
Very interesting. Well, you set up my last question. I know that you're going to have kind of closing out the summit by having some people talk about what they think is going to be happening over the next 10 years, right? We talked about our friend Adam Tank and how he put out a column taking a stab at this and put some ideas out there, which we appreciate. So I'm not letting you off the hook either. I want to hear from the mind of Tom, given all this that you're tapped into, the world of innovation, the world of technology. What are some of your thoughts when we're having this podcast in 2030? I'll put it on the calendar right now. And what will we be saying?
If you want to hold an event called The Next Decade, you've got to have at least some semblance of an idea. One thing to note is that we've asked everybody who's registered, 263 people as of earlier today, to give us 3 predictions. And we're going to open the summit with a summary of those predictions just to see what is the long tail of things that people are going to happen and where is everybody clustered. But also, like, in answering it, I was thinking about it and I really don't, you know, Adam did a really good job. And there's a lot of stuff you hear a lot, like, you know, the data revolution is coming, and I agree with that. You know, data is going to play an absolutely key point. I'm going to start with somewhere that's a little bit off base, and that is to say that I think you will do better investing in the public markets in water than any other sector in the next 10 years. Since 2000, the Dow Jones Water Index went up 1,359%. The S&P 500 went up 119%. I think there is going to be a massive value creation in water that is going to manifest itself in the public markets. That is one prediction I have seen no one else make, and I am happy to lay a bet with anybody around that. I think there's going to be massive nationalization, or nationalization by another name, of utility systems that aren't financially viable. And what I mean by that is I think that there is going to be either federal or state support to amalgamate the service provision, but at a much higher rate than we've seen before. I think people are going to realize in the next 10 years that this is kind of getting out of hand, and that actually the efficiencies from having people work together are real, and that basically people are going to cry enough, and that there's going to be a consolidation. But I think faster, there'll be a tipping point, and then it'll happen faster than people will realize. I also think that we're going to see crossover technology come to prominence far faster than we anticipate. And again, my bet is on synthetic biology, especially in wastewater. I also think that what we are going to see is people waking up to the possibilities, specifically around energy inputs. I think a lot of really interesting stuff is going to come from being able to take essentially wastewater treatment facilities off the grid by increases in battery efficiency, solar panel efficiency, and what that actually means for the deployment of sanitation worldwide, because it's still, I mean, whether or not you use the 2.1 billion figure or the 750 million figure, like, it's a wildly large proportion of the human population. And I think innovations in adjacent sectors are going to be brought in at a pace that that will surprise us. And I think at the core of that is going to be a transformation in talent. And so this is kind of another prediction. So what we are seeing, even in the last, like, 6 months, maybe even in the last 3 months, around the narrative of climate change and how fast the climate change issue is going, whether or not you're talking about Microsoft going to carbon positive, and that's real, by the way. I had a conversation yesterday about Amazon. They've got a huge communications problem around this. but they're actually going to offset all of their scope 3 emissions. Huge, huge deal. And then once you get people, someone like Larry Fink of BlackRock, who is the largest asset manager and asset provider in the world, saying that like our screening for environmental, social, and governance related risks is going to become much, much more stringent. It's going to become part of our investment strategy in a way that it hasn't done before. Like, even if he goes like 15% of the way there, that is a huge deal. But what he thought he was making an announcement about climate change, he was making an announcement about water. That where these climate change risks manifest themselves is, I mean, whatever you want to do it, like even if it's 60%, but I think that's really low. I think it's at least 80% of this manifest themselves through water, whether it's falling out of the sky or becoming salty or not being around or being around too much, mm-hmm. right? Like all of this stuff, like what smashes up the economic value that Larry Fink is talking about is the hydrological ramifications of climate change. And you're seeing a lot more talent now looking at like, look, it's very cushy working for Pinterest or whatever. Like, that's fine, but we're actually in a fight here.
Yeah.
And I don't want to live in Cormac McCarthy's The Road, and I'm going to go and do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
When they start looking at it, they will see that, like, GHG abatement is huge. Let's please go do that. Absolutely. Please, please, please. But I think you're going to, what we've already seen in terms of assessing the entrepreneurs that are applying to Imagine H2O in the last, like, 3 or 4 years, is that there has been a real corner turned in terms of the quality of the entrepreneurs and the quality of the talent that is coming to us, like, with company ideas, or is that is coming to us, like, you know, almost asking for jobs and, you know, where can I work? And I think that acceleration is going to have a huge knock-on effect. I think this talent thing is going to accelerate. And if you overlay it with the last one I'm going to make, which is, again, in your area, people are going to figure out that this is a communication fight more than anything else. We're already seeing the beginnings of it. Really encourage what's happening on Twitter. People are actually putting out adverts for what they're doing. Thank you, EJ Water Collaborative and SFPUC and all of the others that I'm finally seeing you. But like, when you combine those things together, like the awareness of what's going on and the good work being done, as well as bringing talented people in, then the big stuff happens. So there's a few things in there. Hopefully a couple of them haven't been said before, but you're going to hear a whole load more on March the 26th.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like we should be pretty excited about the 2020s here. You know, that it's there's massive challenges, but these opportunities are so exciting.
I've been slightly guilty in the past of being like, everything is broken and we need to fix it. Which is the wrong way of going about it. So I'm going to do a Twitter thread over the next 10 days. It's at Inverine Pharma, if you care at all. And I'm just going to list out the market sizes within water, because the sustainable water management market is going to be $985 billion 2025. That is huge, super large. And if you want to see how that kind of breaks down, I think it's one of the things that people really need is misunderstood about the water sector, because nobody knows anything about it. But just in terms of the gross potential financial outcome for smart people who want to help the world, you know, let's create these incentive structures, right?
Tom, always enjoyable, informative, good time talking to you. I appreciate it a lot. I look forward to catching up with you soon in person and hearing what's coming next year. You keep raising the bar for yourself on this, on the topics at the summit, so.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. It's, you know, we really appreciate West's partnership on this. You know, we just want to keep on taking risks. And I think, you know, hopefully the freedom that we have alongside you to take some risks with this event, you know, we think it's something that people, you know, have enjoyed in the past. And, you know, we've got, you know, limited space left, but there is still some time to get in under the wire. So we hope as many of your listeners are going to come and join us as possible. And again, thank you so much for this. It's always great to speak to you.
All right, Tom, take care.
Cheers, all the best.
Words on water.